"Name him Demijohn, and call him Demi for short," said Laurie. "Daisy and Demi! Just the thing! I knew Teddy would do it," cried Jo, clapping her hands. Teddy certainly had done it that time, for the babies were Daisy and Demi to the end of the chapter. Chapter 29 Calls. "Come, Jo, it's time."
"For what?"
"You don't mean to say you have forgotten that you promised to make half a dozen calls with me today?"
"I've done a good many rash and foolish things in my life, but I don't think I ever was mad enough to say I'd make 6 calls in one day, when a single one upsets me for a week."
"Yes, you did. It was a bargain between us. I was to finish the crayon of Beth for you, and you were to go properly with me and return our neighbor's visits."
"If it was fair, that was in the bond, and I stand to the letter of my bond, Shylock. There is a pile of clouds in the east. It's not fair, and I don't go."
"Now that's shirking. It's a lovely day, no prospect of rain, and you pride yourself on keeping promises. So be honorable. Come and do your duty, and then be at peace for another 6 months." At that minute, Jo was particularly absorbed in dressmaking, for she was mantua maker general to the family, and took a special credit to herself because she could use a needle as well as a pen. It was very provoking to be arrested in the act of a first trying on, and ordered out to make calls in her best array on a warm July day. She hated calls of the formal sort, and never made any till Amy compelled her with a bargain, bribe, or promise. In the present instance, there was no escape, and having clashed her scissors rebelliously, while protesting that she smelled thunder, she gave in, put away her work, and taking up her hat and gloves with an air of resignation, told Amy the victim was ready.
"Jo March, you are perverse enough to provoke a saint. You don't intend to make calls in that state, I hope?" cried Amy, surveying her with amazement.
"Why not? I'm neat and cool and comfortable. Quite proper for a dusty walk on a warm day. If people care more for my clothes than they do for me, I don't wish to see them. You can dress for both, and be as elegant as you please. It pays for you to be fine. It doesn't for me. And furbelows only worry me."
"Oh, dear," sighed Amy. "Now she's in a contrary fit, and will drive me distracted before I can get her properly ready. I'm sure it's no pleasure to me to go today, but it's a debt we owe society, and there's no one to pay it but you and me. I'll do anything for you, Jo, if you'll only dress yourself nicely, and come and help me do the civil. You can talk so well, look so aristocratic in your best things, and behave so beautifully if you try, that I'm proud of you. I'm afraid to go alone. Do come and take care of me." "You're an artful little puss to flatter and wheedle your cross old sister in that way. The idea of my being aristocratic and well-bred, and your being afraid to go anywhere alone. I don't know which is the most absurd. Well, I'll go if I must, and do my best. You shall be commander of the expedition, and I'll obey blindly. Will that satisfy you?" said Jo, with a sudden change from perversity to lamb-like submission.
"You're a perfect cherub. Now put on all your best things, and I'll tell you how to behave at each place, so that you will make a good impression. I want people to like you, and they would if you'd only try to be a little more agreeable. Do your hair the pretty way, and put the pink rose in your bonnet. It's becoming, and you look too sober in your plain suit. Take your light gloves and the embroidered handkerchief. We'll stop at Meg's and borrow her white sunshade, and then you can have my dove-colored one." While Amy dressed, she issued her orders, and Jo obeyed them, not without entering her protest, however, for she sighed as she rustled into her new organdy, frowned darkly at herself as she tied her bonnet strings in an irreproachable bow, wrestled viciously with pins as she put on her collar, wrinkled up her features generally as she shook out the handkerchief, whose embroidery was as irritating to her nose as the present mission was to her feelings. And when she had squeezed her hands into tight gloves with 3 buttons and a tassel, as the last touch of elegance, she turned to Amy with an imbecile expression of countenance, saying meekly,
I'm perfectly miserable. But if you consider me presentable, I die happy.
You are highly satisfactory. Turn slowly round and let me get a careful view. Joe revolved, and Amy gave a touch here and there, then fell back with her head on one side, observing graciously.
Yes, you'll do. Your head is all I could ask, for that white bonnet with the rose is quite ravishing. Hold back your shoulders and carry your hands easily, no matter if your gloves do pinch. There's one thing you can do well, Joe, that is wear a shawl. I can't. But it's very nice to see you, and I'm so glad Aunt March gave you that lovely one. It's simple but handsome, and those folds over the arm are really artistic. Is the point of my mantle in the middle, and have I looped my dress evenly? I like to show my boots, for my feet are pretty, though my nose isn't. You are a thing of beauty and a joy forever, said Joe, looking through her hand with the air of a connoisseur at the blue feather against the golden hair. Am I to drag my best dress through the dust, or loop it up, please, ma'am? Hold it up when you walk, but drop it in the house. The sweeping style suits you best, and you must learn to trail your skirts gracefully. You haven't half-buttoned one cuff. Do it at once. You'll never look finished if you are not careful about the little details, for they make up the pleasing whole. Jo sighed, and proceeded to burst the buttons off her glove in doing up her cuff. But at last both were ready, and sailed away looking as pretty as pictures, Hannah said, as she hung out of the upper window to watch them. Now, Joe, dear, the Chesters consider themselves very elegant people, so I want you to put on your best deportment. Don't make any of your abrupt remarks or do anything odd, will you? Just be calm, cool, and quiet. That's safe and ladylike. And you can easily do it for 15 minutes, said Amy, as they approached the first place, having borrowed the white parasol and been inspected by Meg, with a baby on each arm. Let me see. Calm, cool, and quiet. Yes, I think I can promise that. I've played the part of a prim young lady on the stage, and I'll try it off. My powers are great, as you shall see, so be easy in your mind, my child. Amy looked relieved, but naughtily Joe took her at her word, for during the first call she sat with every limb gracefully composed, every fold correctly draped, calm as a summer sea, cool as a snowbank, and as silent as a sphinx. In vain Mrs. Chester alluded to her charming novel, and the Mrs. Chester introduced parties, picnics, the opera, and the fashions. Each and all were answered by a smile, a bow, and a demure yes or no, with the chill on. In vain Amy telegraphed the word talk, tried to draw her out, and administered covert pokes with her foot. Joe sat as if blandly unconscious of it all, with deportment like Maud's face, icily regular, splendidly null. "What a haughty, uninteresting creature that oldest Miss March is," was the unfortunately audible remark of one of the ladies as the door closed upon their guests. Joe laughed noiselessly all through the hall, but Amy looked disgusted at the failure of her instructions, and very naturally laid the blame upon Joe. "How could you mistake me so? I merely meant you to be properly dignified and composed, and you made yourself a perfect stock and stone. Try to be sociable at the Lambs, gossip as other girls do, and be interested in dress and flirtations and whatever nonsense comes up. They move in the best society, are valuable persons for us to know, and I wouldn't fail to make a good impression there for anything." "I'll be agreeable. I'll gossip and giggle and have horrors and raptures over any trifle you like. I rather enjoy this. And now I'll imitate what is called a charming girl. I can do it, for I have Mae Chester as a model, and I'll improve upon her. See if the Lambs don't say, 'What a lively, nice creature that Joe March is!'" Amy felt anxious, as well she might, for when Joe turned freakish there was no knowing where she would stop. Amy's face was a study when she saw her sister skim into the next drawing-room, kiss all the young ladies with effusion, beam graciously upon the young gentleman, and join in the chat with a spirit which amazed the beholder.
Amy was taken possession of by Mrs. Lamb, with whom she was a favourite, and forced to hear a long account of Lucretia's last attack, while three delightful young gentlemen hovered near, waiting for a pause when they might rush in and rescue her.